Great to see you all. Thank you, Nigel. Always know that you can rely on Nigel. There's no heckling allowed today, okay? Hi, John. Great to see you. okay, any questions? You can fire them through to Gareth on that text, or you can just wait until the end, and we'll have probably 20 minutes of taking questions from the floor, if there are any. Guys, this isn't about winning an argument today, yeah? This is about just entering into a conversation for us all. And the way that we've done it this time is by taking the question and having a 20-minute conversation that's me saying something. And if you have questions in connection with that, then you can fire those back. If you've got any questions, if you've got any thoughts at the end of this, then in terms of, I would have liked it a different way, then we'd love to have that feedback. We really would. So that's good. So this, as Gareth has said, this is the first of a number of questions that we've chosen in response to your responses to our original question. Yeah, if you had the opportunity to ask God anything, what would it be? So thanks for the feedback and the questions that you've asked. Really insightful and thought-provoking. And unlike what Gareth has just said to you, I don't profess to be some form of spiritual guru and have all the answers, because I just haven't. You only got to ask Kath that, and she's not here. So I have got all the answers, actually. That's brilliant. Before I try and unpack what I think the answer to this question may look like, can I just ask you guys to consider this question as we sort of make our way through this evening? What would you want God to do to facilitate you getting to know him better? And if all of those requests, all of those thoughts were met, how serious are you about wanting to engage further with him in this? I have 20 minutes, okay? I'm looking here, okay, 20 minutes, half past, which barely gives me enough time to scrape the surface of this huge discussion. Yeah, and in fact, I prepared all this week. I wrote loads and loads and loads of notes, and had to sort of cut two-thirds of it out. So really, we are very much skimming through this topic. And it is food for thought. That's how I want you to look at it, is food for thought tonight. As a result, the first two points that I would have wanted to have spent some time on, I'm really going to just skim over, and they are the Bible and creation. I'm just going to skim these, okay? So the first one is the Bible. The slides are up there. So those that are facing me from this way are going to have a crick neck by the end of the process, okay? How does the Bible fit into answering this question? I don't know about you, but I'm sure you feel the same way. Developments in modern technology over the last 50 years have been quite staggering. And I say 50 because I'm approaching... I know you're amazed. I know Patrick's looking amazed there. I'm approaching that milestone later on this year, so a good few months away. And those developments have opened up so many new channels of communication and consequential relationships that couldn't perhaps even be dreamed about prior to those advancements. Can you imagine life without the mobile phone? I can't. You know, when the internet goes down, what do we do? How do we live our lives, eh? And on one level, the Bible is one of those communication channels, albeit a less technically sophisticated form, but it's nevertheless a communication channel which God has initiated in order for the relationship to begin. The Bible is a very old book. Okay, it's a very old book indeed, and it needs to be interpreted in that context. And at its heart, the Bible is a library of many, many different types of books written by many different individuals, some of which reflect God's desire to explain things to us, received by humans through divine revelation, which again needs to be interpreted in context. Yeah? Many of the books, however, are historical accounts of real-life events which highlight how God has interacted with real individuals in their personal lives. I suppose the root of this question that we're looking at this evening stems from a desire for some of those personal encounters that are recorded in the Bible to be evident and to be real and to be experienced in our own lives on the canvas of our personal existence. What the Bible then offers is an insight into what God is like, what we can expect from him in terms of relationship, as seen through the lives of others who have had personal experience of him in the past. So the Bible offers a window, a portal into a life we would be unable to possibly even imagine if we didn't have the Bible there. Just like the mobile phone, as I mentioned earlier, opens up a channel of communication we couldn't experience without it, so the Bible offers us an opportunity to find out about God that we wouldn't have if we just didn't have the Bible. The Bible has been built up over thousands of years, and it gives us valuable insight into how God has made himself known to individuals in the past, which actually says something about him and what we can expect from him in terms of personal interaction and relationship for ourselves. I would at the very least encourage you to start finding out what's in the Bible. Perhaps you've never opened it. Have a look. You know, there's some fantastic Bible aids that are out now. One of them on the internet is www.readscripture.org. It's a brilliant way, 5-minute sketches explaining what this book of the Bible is on about. Well, this book of the Bible, really, really helpful. So I'm not saying to you go away and start reading it, yeah, from the beginning to end, because you'll find it that difficult, but there are ways of being helped through that process. Okay, I told you that this is going to be a skip through. That was 2 minutes, and I've covered the Bible. Okay, on to creation. The second point that I'm going to skim through, but that I would like us to consider in our attempt to answer in this question of God revealing himself to us, is the world around us, creation. It is quite amazing, I think, how science has managed to successfully take the credit for the idea that the universe had a beginning, especially in the light that, it wasn't until the mid-1960s that science even began to suggest such a thing, that the universe had a beginning. Science up until that point had propagated that the universe always existed and had no beginning. And in fact, initially strongly opposed the argument to the contrary. And of course, the contrary argument predominantly came from Christians who had been arguing for millennia that the world and the universe definitely had a beginning, and that beginning had its origins in God. The Apostle Paul, who is one of the major writers of the New Testament, and the New Testament is the second part of the Bible. The Bible's in two parts, the Old Testament, the New Testament. The Apostle Paul was a major writer of the New Testament, and this is what he said in one part. The basic reality of God is plain enough. Open your eyes and there it is. By taking a long and thoughtful look at what God has created, people have always been able to see what their eyes as such can't see. His eternal power, for instance, and the mystery of his divine being. So nobody has a good excuse. I have to say, when I stop for a moment and I look around, I look at the universe, I look at the world, and I look at my body and how it's put together, I'm astonished at its complexity and the perfection of design. Pat! Cheeky! Some of you might think that this is not that perfect, but it is. It is, and yours is as well. It's absolutely wonderful, absolutely wonderful. Did you know that science has no idea how life actually started on this planet. Did you know that? Did you know that Darwin's theory of evolution has absolutely nothing to say about how life began? Do you know that? That's a fact. It's a fact. The world we live in is amazing, and it's so complex that to me, the notion of no design, it coming about just by accident, no design, needs a whole level of faith all of its own. The complexity of the design and the abundance and complexity of life in this world is just astonishing, at least I think. That's my view. Did you know that science acknowledges that the likelihood of life just happening by chance, as it has on Earth, is so small that it's statistically impossible with one universe? Do you know that? The chance is one in such a big number, you can't even comprehend it. Well, I can't, and I'm an accountant. So, you know, I like big numbers. The chance is one in such a big number that it renders it statistically impossible. So in order to get around this, they have come up with this theory of there being multi-universes, billions of universes, in order to be able to say, actually, if you've got more universes, then the chances increase. Is Paul right when he says, the answer lies right in front of our eyes every moment of every day? That God has made himself known to us through what has been made, and we choose either to ignore, perhaps, or resist. Okay. That's creation done. Let me just check that. Okay. The third, and I'm getting through, the third reason I got, or the third thing that I want us just to look at tonight in connection with this question of God revealing himself is the man Jesus Christ. Let me introduce you to Jesus. Up until now, we've been talking rather philosophically, I suppose, but here is someone real. The most persuasive thing that God has done in terms of revealing himself is found in the person of Jesus of Nazareth. There's no escaping this man's influence on the world. He was born in obscurity, born in poverty. He died in poverty. He never raised an army or had a political party. Yet his teachings have shaped our society, and his followers are household names. I once heard it said, if you were around back then, the first century, when Jesus was around, and you were offered a bet on what would last the longest, the influence of Jesus or the influence of the Roman Empire, I'm sure that the odds would not stack in Jesus' favor. Would you have put money on it? Would you have put money on Jesus and his motley crew of 11 close followers outlasting the might of the Roman Empire? Yet today, 2,000 years on, we give our children names, Peter, John, and Mary, and we call our dogs Caesar and Nero, yeah? In the 6th century, a Scythian monk proposed a new calendar system, which wasn't based on the foundation of the Roman Empire, as you might expect, but instead it was based on the birth of Jesus. And the birth of this calendar was not just a chronological convenience, but a claim. The birth of an idea that life is not just a random cycle of ups and downs, but that it has meaning, that it is leading somewhere. And the critical event of this meaningful life, guess what, was centered around the life of a carpenter from Nazareth, who was born in obscurity, lived in a region of the Roman Empire that was famous for absolutely nothing, who had no money or position, who lived and died in the Roman Emperor of the day, never even heard of him. Yet today, every king or queen or president or prime minister who lives, the date of their birth and the date that they die is referenced to the birth of this carpenter. from Nazareth. Who was this man? Some say that he was good. Many people say that he was good. But his claim was far more serious than that. He claimed to be God in the flesh. Emmanuel, his name was given in the Bible, which means God with us. On one occasion, when speaking to Jesus' disciples, Jesus said, he said this, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." I'm sure you know it. I'm sure you know this passage. "No one comes to the Father except through me. If you really know me, you know my Father as well. From now on, you do know him and have seen him." Jesus has been being very clear here, friends. For he's not saying, "You've heard my teachings and the way that I've dealt with all manner of different situations. These are good ideas for the way that you should live. I recommend them to you." Jesus isn't saying that. He's saying, "I'm God." That's what he's saying. He's saying, "I'm God. I am the way for you to know what God the Father is like. More than that, I am the only way for you to have access to him," Jesus said. Now, many people, whether Christian or not, have no problem acknowledging that Jesus was a good man, was a good person, and his teachings were good. Who could argue with love one another after all? It's difficult to do that, isn't it? But not many non-Christians would actually acknowledge that he was God in the flesh. Many non-Christians would have a big problem acknowledging that Jesus was God. But follow this logic for a minute. If he wasn't God, he can't be good, can he? Because what he says about himself was false. If he wasn't God, I think there are potentially three alternatives here. Either he himself was deluded about that assumption that he was God, so he was mad. Or worse, he was out to deliberately delude others, which makes him bad. Or really, he is who he says he is, and he is God in the flesh. Is that slide right, friends? Jesus, are those options right? Mad, bad, or God? If you're of my generation, you'll know Bono. I'm sure from U2, the band. Many of you will know of him, I'm sure. But he's a Christian, and he was being interviewed on a U.S. chat show back a few years ago, and the chat show host was taking a mickey out of him a bit and probing him on his faith, and he particularly asked this question about Jesus. He says this: "Jesus has his rank among the world's greatest thinkers, but Son of God, isn't that far-fetched?" And this is what Bono says. You probably can't read it from where you are. This is what Bono says in reply: "It's not far-fetched to me. Look, the secular response to the Christian story always goes like this: he was a prophet, obviously a very interesting guy, but actually Christ doesn't allow you that. He doesn't let you off the hook. Christ says, 'I'm God incarnate.' So what you're left with is either Christ was who he said he was, or a complete nutcase." "I'm not joking here," says Bono. "The idea that the entire course of civilization for over half the globe could have its fate changed and turned upside down by a nutcase, for me, that's far-fetched." And Bono is right, friends. If Jesus is not God, he's definitely not good. He can only be bad or mad. And the influence that he has had on our lives tells me that he's neither of those two. He's neither bad or mad, which leaves me with one conclusion: that he must be who he said he is, God in human form. That question needs considering, doesn't it? How has this man from the back end to beyond had such an influence on this world? Well, maybe it's because A lot of people throughout history have adopted the same approach as many Christians do, which is simply this. When somebody predicts their own death, which, let's be honest, isn't that difficult, is it? Because we're all going to pass that way at one point. But when somebody predicts their own death and their resurrection, and then pulls it off, you want to listen to that person, don't you? I don't know about you, but I want to listen to that person. You see, friends, people followed Jesus after his resurrection because of his resurrection. And so all of a sudden, all of the things Jesus had said before the resurrection about himself became all the more relevant and important, as you might expect, after he rises from the dead, after his resurrection. There was nothing, friends, religious about the faith of the first century followers of Jesus. Christianity did not begin with people who believed something. Christianity began with people who saw something. They saw the resurrection, and then they believed in the person they saw who came back from the dead. They followed because the evidence was overwhelming. Take a look at the evidence yourself. The evidence for his resurrection is overwhelming. And I could spend a long time tonight just going through that, and I'm not. You'd be glad to hear. But have a look at it. Have a look at it for yourselves. Christianity does not depend on having faith in faith. There's overwhelming evidence, friends. They saw and believed he was who he said that he was. And if he is who he said he is, the Son of God in human form, hasn't God gone a long way to answering that question of ours about revealing himself to us? Because he has revealed himself to us. If you want to know what God is like, Jesus answers that question. So in answer to that question, what is God like? God is like Jesus in character and nature and attitude. Jesus said, remember, if you have seen me, talking about himself, you've seen God the Father. I know that this question we're addressing tonight is perfectly legitimate. I know that, yeah, and thank you for it. But can you imagine what God is thinking about that question now in the context of Jesus, who he's already revealed to us? Jesus not only shows us what God is like in terms of behavior, approach, attitude, nature, power, etc., but he also tells us what God is like. Three things he tells us about God. The first thing is this, that God is spirit. When he's talking to a lady at a well in Samaria, talking and discussing God with her, Jesus says to her, God is spirit, and his worshippers must worship him in spirit and in truth. Now, this is an amazing statement from 2,000 years ago, that God is immaterial, spaceless, and timeless. But that's okay for us modern thinkers, isn't it? Because science is now confirming that everything we see in the known universe has come from an immaterial source. That's what science tells us now, which is what Christianity has been saying for the last 2,000 years. The difference, of course, is that Christianity says that that immaterial source is the Spirit of God, while science says it's nothing. The second thing that Jesus tells us about God is this, that he is Father. Not the reflection of our earthly fathers, but the perfection of Father. Jesus says, when you pray, start with Father. Here's the thing. God isn't male or female. God doesn't have gender. God is spirit. But he is personal. And he wants to get personal. And he wants a personal relationship with us. And the closest we as material beings are going to get to understand the type of relationship which is available to us with God is that of father and child. So God says, here, have it. That's what it's like, father. That's what I'm like. Try it when you get home. See what happens. God, I'm not experienced at this. Maybe I've never even done this before or tried this out. But what I have is a desire to engage with you on that level, father and child. So, father, see what happens. See what happens. The beauty of God being spirit is that he is everywhere. He's far away and he's near at hand. In fact, God is as close as you want him to be. The other thing that Jesus tells us about God is that God is love. And we don't have time, you might say, thankfully, to delve into this whole wonderful subject of God being love. Let me just say that God, that the love of God for us is expressed in his willingness to reveal Jesus and to send Jesus, his son, into this world. And Jesus Christ, who himself was willing to come and lay down his life so that we could have that open relationship with God. That's how much God loves us, loves you. And that is how much he wants our lives to be driven by that same principle of love ourselves. We've asked that question tonight. Why doesn't God reveal himself? Why can't I get to know him? Well, hopefully tonight you have some food for thought on that subject of how God has actually revealed himself, in part through historical context of his engagement with other individuals as recorded in the Bible, through the world and the universe around us as he created something out of nothing, through Jesus Christ, his son, who fully displays God's nature in terms of his humanity. And he continues, friends, to reveal himself today to all who would accept Jesus to be who he said he was, by giving his spirit into our hearts and into our lives, which then confirms those aspects of God for ourselves. And it is the Holy Spirit and the receipt of the Holy Spirit which brings the whole thing to life. Just one more slide. James, the brother of Jesus, wrote in his letter, come near to God, and he will come near to you. Another translation of that same verse says, just puts it this way, say a quiet yes to God, and he'll be there in no time. Another person in the Bible wrote this about God, if you seek me with all of your heart, you will find me, God says. If you seek me, you will find me if you seek me with all of your heart. God doesn't barge his way into our life. He waits for the door to be opened, for the invitation to be made. So if this is something that interests you, that relationship with God, then why not offer him that invitation to be the father that he wants to be? Okay. Good, thanks guys. Come on. That's a first, isn't it? Well, for me anyway, for me.
Should we have the number back up on the screen, just in case people do a text? While people are thinking, if you've got a question, I want to ask a question. So you said, Pete, that...
Oh, you didn't say you were asking.
Yeah. Well, I'm on a journey as well. The God is as close as you want him to be. And then following that with our verse, if you seek me, you will find me, if you seek me with all of your heart. So what does that look like? How do you do that? How have you done that in your experience? So if there is a desire... for God to be close, to have that relationship with the person who made you, how do you seek him? What does that mean, seek with all your heart?
Well, I'm a firm believer that, God seldom barges his way into our environments and our circumstances. He doesn't go where he isn't invited. Although there have been occasions where people have given testimony to that fact. That fact. So it has already started, I think, with God sending Jesus, which is a revelation in itself of what God is like now. So now we know exactly what God is like. And I would say that if that interests you, then you need to pursue that. So I mentioned in here that there's a relationship that is available with God, the Father, that comes about through Jesus Christ. And look to begin that. The Bible is I know it's an old book, but you know it's an incredible book that tells us an awful lot about God. So the Spirit of God, as you get more attuned with him, you know, people get a strong sense that God directs them on a daily basis, directs them in their lives when they open their lives up to him. Perhaps when you're starting out, you might not be that attuned. So the Bible is a great way of finding out, and I would start with the life of Jesus. I'd start in one of the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John. You know, find out what Jesus said, what he did, what he offers us. Yeah, I would do that.
Great. Jeff, do you have a question?
Okay, I'll start again.
Yeah. When I first heard this question was being put forward for tonight at recent church meetings, it caused me to think about whether I'd ever thought about the same thing. And I could quite categorically say, no, I hadn't. I'd never expected to see the body of Jesus walking down Queen Street in Cardiff. I'd never expected to see Jesus in the flesh. But I have sought out Jesus. And I can remember seeking him out precisely. The year was circa 1994. And I was at a desperately low ebb in my life. And I really didn't know what to do. My low ebb was medically induced. I was unwell. And I was trying to hang on to staying in work, and I felt that I just had to go out in my lunch break, not to eat a sandwich, but to go and find a pew, go into a church, and really share my real deepest concerns and thoughts to somebody that I just perceived, as you mentioned earlier, as an almighty being. I just used that expression. I didn't see it as Jesus Christ. I just saw it as an almighty being. And I went to church, and I'd come away not knowing whether anyone had actually heard me or not. And the next day I would go out, and I might sit in a Catholic church in the town centre of Cardiff. And I'd say my prayers in the same way then. And I could have quite easily gone into a synagogue or into a holy place of any other denomination. But all I was trying to reach out for was this almighty power that could perhaps shine a light to help me get up off my knees. And nothing happened for about, I guess, it must have been 12 months, maybe a little longer than 12 months. And I remember going to bed one night and receiving a message through a dream that I didn't actually take at the time as coming from Jesus Christ. But the message was so powerful, and the urge to respond to it was so, left me so passionate to do it. I shared it with my wife, Jane, and we followed that message. And it was only as a result of what subsequently happened following the receipt of that message did I actually realize that I'd encountered Jesus Christ. That I encountered the fact that I sought him out, he listened, and he chose his time, the most appropriate time as well, to speak to me. So in support of what you have to say, Pete, that's my, if you like, that's my confirmation.
Thank you.
Because the reality is we have a spirit as well, don't we? So the Spirit of God communicates with our spirit. And we think mostly in terms of the material, but we are more than just the material of our physical bodies. We know that. And so God loves to reveal himself, communicate himself to our spirit when we open up our spirit to him and ask him to speak to us. Anybody got a question they want to just throw out? There's an interest one just...
that's an answer to prayer in itself, you know that, don't you?
this is maybe a difficult one for you, Pete. Somebody's asking, what do I need to do to have a perfect body like yours?
Well, Rhiannon. That's not nice, you know that, don't you? That sort of smirk and then burst into laughter. That was obviously Nigel, I think. Nigel asking that question. And you know what you've got to do, Nigel. You've got to work hard. You've got to train. You've got to get yourself into the gym and be a bit determined, a bit more determined. I was talking to Nigel Edwards then. Sorry, not Nigel. Not Nigel.
Okay. All right. So one of the questions that we're picking up on the next time round is, if God is good and if he is all-powerful, lots of people ask this question in different ways, then why is there so much suffering in the world? Why is there so much pain? And I think probably all of us here are old enough to have experienced suffering. We've all been hurt in different ways, and some... more severely, more deeply than others. But we've experienced the reality of living life in a world that is imperfect and broken. Something's gone wrong. And it's a really, really important question to address and to engage in, even if you can't find a perfect answer to it, but to engage in the process of how do we grapple with that? And how does that fit then with God, who sends his son into the world in order to bring about the transformation of the world, to make all things new, to heal that brokenness, and to start now. Some of you here, I know, have experienced something of that healing, of the restoration of brokenness. Jesus already began that work in you. But we're gonna look at that question next time. So it'd be great if you can come along and engage in that. If you do have any questions, any lingering questions, and something comes to you in the middle of the night, Put the phone number into your phone, and I won't answer it in the middle of the night. I'll forward it on to somebody else, Peter Allen, and they can answer it. But please feel free to ask any questions. Should we thank Pete again for?
Thank you.
Now there's some cake, some dessert. So please hang around. How much longer?